CliffCentral.com. No borders. It's your boy KF. We're back after a long vacay. I mean, I think it's been 2 weeks since we've been on air. And it's unfortunate, you know, with the holidays, Easter. What was the holiday before Easter, Palestine? Nah, that was Easter. Before that, because it's been 2 weeks since we've been on air, right? Yeah, and Kamu's still not around. I'm like, yo, dog, it's been 2 weeks and you're not. Oh, he just walked in. Big Daddy Black. All shaven with the fake gold chain. Anyway, so we've got a lot going on the show. I hope Nigeria is listening. Linda, is Linda on?
I am on.
What's up? I hope the whole of Nigeria is listening right now.
We hope so too.
So we've got Linda. I've actually got someone who's in the studio from Nigeria. His name is Suji. And I'm going to introduce you to him a bit later because apparently he's some tycoon, multi-trillionaire, billionaire. And we're going to make sure that he works with Scan.
Good.
Stop very sexual good. Child abuse now. So Linda, okay, let me give a brief background. So Linda is the beautiful Linda. I met Linda back in 2007. We met in 2007 first. That was in New Delhi. Linda is a Nigerian-American. A Nigerian-American who, surprisingly, considering that everyone is moving out of Africa, you know, she moved back to Africa specifically to deal with child sexual abuse on the continent. Linda, can you tell us a bit more about Stop Scan?
Okay. Stop Scan came out of a lot of the travels we've done from India to Jamaica. And Jamaica actually was where it ignited. Because when I was in Jamaica, I had an opportunity to visit a home where there was a lot of young girls who were pregnant and they've been sexually abused. So it ignited my own experience back home and knowing what is happening in Nigeria, knowing that we didn't have as much of the resources and support that I had witnessed while I was in Jamaica.
Exactly.
So with going back to school and returning back to the US, I decided that it's time to come back home because I was tired of listening or opening up newspapers and seeing a child being sexually abused. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, what we see on the news is just a tip of the iceberg of what is actually happening on the ground. And for the past 4 years, I've been doing the research, coming back and forth, and I've discovered that there are a lot of amazing people doing the work here on ground. But what people are saying is that they don't know where they are. So we want to create a platform where if you go on our website, you get an opportunity to see different nonprofits, different tech people, different companies, no matter what services that they're offering, you can access that. If you need a therapist, you can access that. If you need a nonprofit, you can access that. We want somewhere where people can come together and do that because what we want to encourage mostly is the healing. Healing for survivors, healing for victims, and healing for their family. And we can't do it alone. And you need 4 or 5 different branches of services to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, Linda, I mean, it might sound as an ignorant question, but I mean, back in when I after India, after college, I mean, I was working at Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, and we started the Rights Club. I think I shared some of the documents with you. And it was mainly because of, and it, like, this might sound ignorant. Kamu's my co-host, and he's here too, Linda.
Hey, how you doing, Linda?
Hello, how are you?
Sorry I came in late. I just had
okay, at least you're coming to Justice Minister. You're fine.
I swear.
Yeah, so I mean, my issue is in terms of reporting. Like, actually, like, children, is there still an issue with children coming out and saying, I've been abused? Because obviously that's where it starts. Like, a lot of people don't actually open up. They're afraid to come out and say that, okay, I have been abused. Is that still an actual issue?
It is. It is because we're in a culture where stigma is attached to sexual abuse. We've had a lot of cases where, apart from even the children speaking out, the parents, when they discover maybe a... I'll give an example. Last year, I remember talking to one of my trustees, and she told me about a 2-year-old who has been sexually abused by the father. The mom reached out, and when we rallied around and found a set of people who would help, they eventually reached out to her, and she said, no, I don't want to be I don't want my family name to be ruined. I don't. I want my child to be marriageable. So we're not going to deal with this. Wow. We as in Nigeria, we don't have an organization that empowers you to actually go in and actually save that child without the parent's consent. So there's a lot of cultural and religious issues that is not helping. That's,
without it parent's consent, what if the parent is the abuser?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And yeah, we have a lot of that. And sometimes it is that case. And like in the United States, it's different. Like children's services can go in and take up that child and take care of that child. But here, mostly, you need an invitation in. We're working to a point where we document all of the experiences we are having with the work we're doing. We hope that when we show this to the lobbyists and the government, we tell them this is the problem. And if you do not stop this from happening, or empower an organization to do better, we'll keep losing the children. And there's a lot of psychological damage that is being done to these kids, because it's not just a physical harm. You're a child's life.
And as Africans, we don't really believe in going to a therapist. Like, oh, I'm going to sit on a couch and pay you per hour to tell you my problems. Like, but therapy is actually something that is very, very necessary. I think we had our own form of therapy as Africans. You'd go and talk to your uncle or your aunt or something, right?
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much.
So, I mean, it's just different forms of therapy. But what strategies are you... Are you trying to utilize in terms of getting the message across, opening up the right structures? How is funding? Are there donors? What's the landscape like right now?
Okay, currently, you know better. I've reached out to you. Currently, because this is a startup, and officially we're registered in the United States. We're registered in the United States as a nonprofit. We have our 501c. So what we're doing in right now in the U.S. with my board of directors is we're reaching out to different companies in the U.S. asking them to donate to us, because it's a win-win situation. It's tax deductible. It's it's good for their business, so that we can come back and do the work here. Mm-hmm. And we're also reaching out to people here saying, adopt us as a CSR. Let's do this work together.
Yeah.
We make you look good, basically, and we do the work. And for the accountability and the transparency, we know how the system works, if not in Nigeria, but back in the United States. If we are not accountable and transparent with the fundings we get, we will lose our 501c. Uh-huh. And I told my team yesterday, I'm not being employed by people who are telling me to make profit for them. Mm-hmm. I'm being employed by the masses. And the people we're fighting for are the people that employed me, because I'm accountable to them. I'm accountable to the victims. I'm accountable to their families. And I'm accountable to this community.
And what's sad is that a lot of these matters aren't taking precedence, because, I mean, like, look at people are talking about global warming. People are talking about change of government, regime change. It's politics, democracy, and governance. So a lot of NGO money, you know, USAID, the Gates Foundation, PEPFAR, goes towards that, but it doesn't go... But it's not going to issues such as child abuse, children's rights, and so forth. How are you dealing with that in terms of bigger donors like USAID and CEDA and stuff?
Right now, because like I said, this is the first year we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Where we started officially in Nigeria last year. This is the first year we're doing this. So a lot of people are skeptical. They don't know who you are. And luckily, the experience I bring into the system is the fact that anytime I talk to them, I'm like, first of all, we're a nonprofit registered in the U.S. We're also registered locally in every country. But our mandate is for the whole of Africa, not actually just Nigeria. I'm starting from Nigeria because this is home and it's easy for me to get into the system and create a structure that we hope that when we go to Ghana, we go to Sierra Leone, or we come to South Africa, that structure has been built and we continue it. And also, I let them know that I used to work for the State Department.
Yeah, yeah.
And that experience alone gives you credibility.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A few amazing companies, no matter how small they are, have been very supportive. Mm. Because currently, they're actually self-funding. We've not actually gotten any major donation from no one or grants, which most people say you have to create something for people to buy into the idea. So we're hoping that after this movement that we started this month, that people would buy into the idea and see why it is necessary for us to do this. It's necessary because the people you're employing may be suffering from child sexual abuse from their childhood. You don't know how to handle it. We will handle it for you. We will deal with that. We would encourage them to go to the places they need to go. And we're looking to create a lot of network and make sure that the culture of silence ends.
Yeah.
And for us to do that, it's not, I'm not going to go to a print and smile at them and say, well, I'm a nonprofit, print stuff for me for free. Neither am I going to go to any different, the Wi-Fi company and say, smile to them and they'll give me Wi-Fi for free. It's a business that just doesn't make money. Mm-hmm. And I have a business degree and I tell people, I'm like, I see this as a business. So the integrity and the brand matters to us. But we cannot do it without the support of big companies and big donors that would hopefully buy into the movement we're creating.
Speaking of which, Linda, before I go there, how do people get you on social media? How do people contact SCAN, Stop SCAN? Stop SCAN stands for Stop Sexual Child Abuse, right?
Yes. In the whole of the social media platform, that's Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, you can follow us at Stop SCAN, STOPSCAN. Please go in there, follow us. We have about 6,000 followers right now on Facebook, and it's growing, and we're glad that you're listening. And if you want to contact us via email, we have info@stopscan.org. Okay. And our website is live, it's stopscan.org. That is STOPSCAN.
.org.
Org, yes.
Yeah. Amazing work, Linda. Carry on, keep the fire burning. And then I wanted to introduce you to someone we have in the studio right now. I actually sent out a tweet so you guys could probably follow each other and then, you know, get in touch when he's back in Nigeria. We have Suji, who is the CEO of the Suji Motor Group, and they're a luxury real estate development company. Suji?
Yeah, hello. How are you, Linda, man? Let me just tell
you. Hello, Suji. How are you?
Let me tell you, you're doing a great job. And
Thank you very much.
Please just... everybody knows that it's very difficult to do business in Nigeria, but but with dedication, with exceptional dedication and a never give up characteristic, I think you make whatever you're doing, you're gonna change, you know, the narrative of young women that's been abused. And I think that, you know, without a stop to that, many things will never happen, many progress will never be achieved, and I really want to encourage you and keep doing a fantastic job, and only God can pay you back.
Thank you so much. Hopefully we look forward to seeing you when you get back to Nigeria. I should be here till the 16th of May, so hopefully I see you before that so we can talk. And like I said, we need our guys like you to make this happen.
This one is serious, Oga.
Absolutely. In a business school, how to do business in Nigeria. It's a different ball game. Absolutely. You really need to be in the street to understand how to do business in Nigeria.
Absolutely.
But it's, like you said, it's every time I spoke to a team of volunteers yesterday, I told them that anytime someone cuss at you or make you feel bad because of the work you're doing, think about a little girl, think about a little boy who is having a harder time than you at the moment, and just smile. You're not working for the people right in front of you. You are working for a greater good that is bigger than yourself.
Absolutely.
So smile, remember to sleep and in the process, and drink a lot of...
Absolutely.
And drink... Yes.
Amen, right. Linda. Okay, I'm going to cut you off before you turn this into a Nigerian show. The show is called No Borders. It's for all Africans.
No Borders.
Yeah.
What is it? All right, bro. Thank you so much for having us today.
Thank you so much, Linda. Ciao. See you soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye, Nina.
Yeah, you already know. Come.
What's up?
What's chin?
Nothing much, man. Sorry, man. I was late again. Unfortunately. Yeah. But I'm here.
You look kind of, you know, like you kind of out of it. You look hungover.
How many did you have last night? I've had the worst week because I think Tim Westwood at 60 years of age still likes to do things like...
Yo, is Tim 60 years old?
Tim is going to be 60 this year, but he looks like...
Golly, yeah, man. I mean, we were knocking back shots at him at News Cafe.
There you go, exactly.
I'm like, this dude, and he's still going hard for 60
started,
years
it
old.
It started as a privilege, but now it's actually hindering my progress.
Right? Yeah, like, okay, now
I'm
fat.
So like, you reminded me that we had work today.
Yeah. I did not want to wake up. I'm like, okay. And then I forgot that we had Suji on the show, right?
I couldn't, because his PA is on me like all the time.
I came in sweatpants. Yeah. I'm like, God, what? God damn it. We got a millionaire coming onto the show.
And I got lost at the door because we switched up now.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, everyone needs to know that Touch HD has gone to a new space. They've left our building.
Oh, we evicted them from our building.
So we say goodbye to them. Yeah, and we have our space back. Suji,
yeah,
the
cat
doing?
Was here earlier. Well, yeah, she was looking fine as hell.
Don't talk about cat. How you doing, Suji?
Very well, man. It's nice seeing you.
Amazing, amazing. I was looking at your profile, and when I sent it to Kev for about a month back, and we were just trying to like put our minds around how does it feel to be worth $63 million in Africa? Generally, I mean, look at it like realistically. I just really got involved in this.
Like, no, you switched up your seat, yeah, and you looked at it like,
I really want to know. I really want to know. To be 35 years old, right?
Yeah, 36.
Wait, hold up.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll give you the extra.
36
the extra
years
one
old,
year.
And you're worth more millions than your age.
Fine. I wanted to make you look good, Doug. I was gonna bring you down to 35. It's fine. 36. Suji wants to be 36. No problem. And you want 63. 36 and worth $63 million.
And you didn't even come with a briefcase, dog, with like at least R1 million. Come on, man. Bring us a gold chain or something.
But it boils down to the characteristics of our founding fathers and what is our vision for life and where do we want to be?
Yeah.
And what do we want to achieve as Africans?
As Africans, yeah.
Because I just finished an event yesterday,
yeah,
and I made an amazing speech selling Africa because I think people had forgotten the competitive advantage of Africa,
that we have, yeah.
That luxury civilization,
yeah,
greatness started from Africa.
Yeah.
I mean, from the times of Mansa Musa, who is still the richest man in recorded history.
That's very true.
I have an obligation to be successful, period.
Damn.
I love that. That
is deep, bro.
I think that is the most powerful way of explaining why you're worth $63 million.
I have an obligation.
We've spoken to people who are worth about 20,000, man. And they couldn't even explain that. So now you see the vast difference?
Yeah,
you
fam.
See, that sort of speech and that sort of tone tells you that this man is in charge. I wanted to ask a few questions pertaining to, obviously, how you got into the business, how you started conducting your business. Obviously, you had a previous job profile. So you didn't automatically just become an entrepreneur. Yeah, you went through a couple of phases.
I think people say, entrepreneurs are made. Or they're born.
Yeah.
I don't even know which one I am because I have siblings and everything. But I think I won an ovarian lottery.
Yeah.
My mother.
This guy keeps. God. This guy's got punchlines.
Like, wait, you know what I mean?
I'm very sincere. I think I won an ovarian lottery.
Yeah.
I think I have a competitive advantage over other people because of my mother.
Yeah.
My mother dropped out of primary school, not high school.
Yeah.
Primary school.
Yeah.
And they sent her to Cameroon as a sales girl, like an house girl.
Yeah.
But she changed her whole narrative. And today, she's now a distributor for Nestle, one of the top five distributors of Nestle, with about $25 to $50 million annual revenue.
Yeah.
This is a woman that does not have zero education. That has zero education.
Yeah.
But she's been able to look at a situation, and she did not allow a situation to control our reality.
100%, yeah.
Growing up with this type of woman,
you can only be successful. Be successful. Yeah.
So I remember, I was born in the market. Like, I don't even know Lagos, but there's a local market called Okiari.
We have a very good idea of what the market is like in Lagos.
Okiari, yeah. Okiari is one of the busiest markets in Africa. Very local, very, very unpredictable. But I was born in this market.
Yeah.
And my first introduction to enterprising was when I was like 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
And there was a new business called Okada business. Okada,
yeah,
like
the, yeah, motorcycle, the motorcycle business. Yeah.
The motorcycle. And, you know, from the market, from my mom, from cousins, I had some money. I didn't know what to do with it. So my brother's friend had an Okada and he wanted to sell it. I bought it up.
Yeah.
I'm 7 years old. I bought the Okada. I said, listen, what am I going to do? He gave me a driver to ride it.
Wait, Suji, hold on. At 7 years old?
Yes, I bought an Okada.
You bought an Okada.
An Okada. A look of... That's my first introduction to enterprise.
I'm just going
to
keep
okay,
quiet.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. We're going to go out with Suzy and have a real discussion.
We're going to play music for the next 30 minutes. The other guests, unfortunately, we'll see you all next time.
Who starts a business after being born in a market and then starts a business at 7 years old and buys an Okada? That he cannot write, even though, okay, go on. Ride. Yeah. Sorry, go on, go on.
So, you know, I can't ride it. Yeah. And then they give me a driver, a rider to ride it.
Yeah.
And delivers to me every day some money.
After
3 years, I had 6 Okadas.
You were 10 years old and you had 6 motorcycles.
I had 6 Okadas by then. My house literally became an Okada spot where my father was so upset, he chased the Okadas away, but I didn't chase the entrepreneurship in me away.
Of course, definitely.
You know, but that is my first introduction to enterprise.
So to enterprising, yes.
And I've just been a kid that, you know, some people education is for them, but for me it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my friends, when we're having exams, they cover their papers, they don't want me to see it.
Yeah.
They became professors.
Yeah.
I mean, I had E's. I didn't have A's, I had B, C's.
Yeah.
But today I'm proud to tell you that, you know, I'm 63, what it is.
We are, baby. We are, baby.
You know, okay. Okay, Suge, you know, I love the whole motivational speech. Yeah. And we get it from everybody. Everybody comes like, yeah, I started like this. I am motivational, right? Let's talk practical, right?
Yeah.
Practically. And there's so many ideas. Like, we got friends. Like, Africa has so many ideas. Yeah. And I always like to talk about the billion-dollar tweet.
Yeah.
Which was the dudes, the Uber dudes, right?
The Uber dudes.
So, you know, they started the app, right? They bought like three cars in New York City.
Yeah.
And just a couple of dudes. And then, right, they started and it was actually working. Yeah. Like, with three cars. They're testing it out. Then the billionaire dude, right, he tweets like, yo, I'm looking for somebody who needs some money, something new and cool. Yeah. They tweeted back and then they call it the billion dollar tweet, which is how Uber started, right? Now, basically what I'm saying is, you know, New York City, France, you can bump into a millionaire in the street. And he's like, oh, you got a good idea, Silicon Valley. That's why they started Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Investment in ideas. And how do you do it in
innovation,
Africa?
Innovation, yeah.
Because it's easy for me to say, I want to start business, I'm entrepreneurial, I know this, I got the know-how, I started it for. But dog, for you to wake up and just open up this as an African, say, okay guys, I've got this brilliant idea, I need $1 million.
And a black African at that.
Yo, fam. Yeah.
Now, this is one of the most important questions, like, in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
How can we take African entrepreneurs from where they are to where they want to be?
Yeah.
I'll give you a little story. Steve Jobs and his partner started the Apple in the mother's garage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They took the idea to a bank and the bank loaned them $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I think, in the 60s.
In the 70s, yeah.
Now, these are two guys that dropped out of school, but with an incredible idea, the bank was able to support them, not because their father was somebody or their auntie is because of just intellectual capital. Africa and its leaders must reverse back to understanding that its only capital is not oil or gold, it is people.
Mm.
And until we start investing in those young people, we are not going anywhere, period. Yeah. If Steve Jobs was in Nigeria, for example, there's a place, one place where they sell computers, Computer Village.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the end of the story.
You sell computers, maybe you open a computer shop, and that's the end of a great idea that changed the story of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Africa and Africans, its leaders, its bankers, its venture capitalists must start looking into human capital.
Yes.
Not, you know, the norm of bomb and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Until we do that, nothing's going to change.
100%.
Amen.
I totally agree with that. I think that's the most genuine way of actually looking at it. And the disappointing part of it is that, I mean, we've had these arguments, like, back and forth. It's the leadership that we have in Africa that I'm quick to blame, because essentially for any investment to be made back in young people at an entrepreneurial perspective or from an entrepreneurial level, the leaders need to find that space in their discussions to say, look, can we focus on this for this next period of time? Mm-hmm. Like you were saying earlier, I mean, like, you don't hear much about child sexual abuse and stuff like that. You hear more about, oh, this one wants to be in power now, and that one wants to be in power now. Or no, these ones have a better way of running the country. Mm-hmm. How about you give us back?
Yes.
How about you give us back and that power to be able to do that through entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. It's actually stifled our train of thought. Because because I'm not going to think of amazing ideas, because even if I do come up with an amazing idea, it's gonna chill in my bedroom.
Exactly. Because you know, exactly.
So there's no point of me even thinking about it. I'm gonna think about what's gonna make me money. So I'm gonna go to school and do accounting. Then look for a job.
I'll say one thing that people may find derogatory. I was having an argument with a couple of Nigerian guys the other day, and I said, for all the guys that do fraud, right? Obviously your 419 fraud, your wire guys, all those guys. How much of them have an entrepreneurial spirit in them to be able? That is a business. That is because when you speak to them, guys who do that type of thing, they tell you it's a job. Am I right?
I mean you know? You see, when you is it one of the things that has sold Nigeria in a very most negative way is it's the fraudsters, the drug dealers, and everything. Yeah. But that is not the definition of a 200 million people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I am very proud to be a Nigerian. If I die today and come back, I don't want to be South African.
I want to be
Nigerian. Why? Yeah. And for simple reasons, you have 200 million of abnormal people.
Yeah.
People who their dedication to achieve greatness is just it. You meet a security guy. He has a proposal in his pocket. Yes. He wants to be a businessman. Mm. You meet the taxi driver. Mm. The next thing he wants to tell you that, listen, I'm a taxi driver, but, you know, I want to own my own driver.
Mm. Yes.
So these are incredible people that are just aggressive to achieve success.
That is exactly what I want. You know, and that's what I'm trying to highlight.
I need the spirit.
Yeah.
Without you, the first spirit is the passion and the in-birth decision to want to be something in life. Mm. Because we're surrounded by so many distractions.
Yeah.
We have Africans, we have a reason not to be successful. Because when you look around us, there's no good story around us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
when you decide to shift your narrative and you don't allow your society to have a negative impact on you, then that's the first spirit. That spirit is a winning spirit. Then you now start going to, okay, now I prepare my proposal. Let me look for that guy that maybe one day, you hold it on. That one day, someone will look at me and I could be the next Mark Zuckerberg or the next Steve Jobs or someone that even change. Like, look at the lady that he's talking about, you know, sexual abuse and everything. Yeah. One of the biggest destruction of Africa is that men thinking that they can just look at women and use them as
objects.
Tool, objects.
Yeah.
That's very disgusting.
It is.
And until we have an educational platform that changes the mindset of the people, of the men, and tell you, listen, these are our mothers. Without these people, we might be nobodies.
And you know, I mean, I love that about Nigerians. We're talking to the first Nigerian that we've had on the show, the artist. What's his name? Akinele?
Yeah.
And we actually asked him, yo, what about Nigerians makes them so hungry? Like, I'm actually going to shoot myself in the foot and say, I'm not hungry, fam. You know what I mean? No, for real, because I should have had a proposal with me right now. Like,
exactly,
the minute Suji's walking out, I should have been like, yo, I should have been in my suit. Like, I got him, like,
exactly.
I'm like, and I was telling Dory, I'm like, Dory, I swear, I bet you he's going to come in an expensive suit and look at me in sweatpants. I should have come with the briefcase, lunch money, be like, yo, Suji, let me take you out for lunch, man. Then, you know what I mean? And then whip out the proposal.
Yeah,
what makes Nigerians that hungry?
Really, that's a big question. But I would say it's because, I wouldn't say because of the things we've gone through, because I can look at it that every Nigerian, I can tell you, every Nigerian is a government of his own. Is a government of his own. So since 1960, after our independence, the Nigerian populace has suffered, misstructure of infrastructure, misstructure of leadership. So which means I, that was born in 1981, I grew up in a society that the only way we have light is through a generator sounding. The only way we have water is because my father has a borehole. The only way I can go to school well is because my dad went to work every day to provide education.
Yeah.
So an average Nigerian is programmed as a government.
You don't rely on the state.
That's why Nigerians can't fight. We don't like to fight because we're not expecting anything from the government. So we're not going to fight. Who are we fighting for? What? We will fight you hard if you come and destroy our business.
Yes.
But for us to go and fight, no. We're not interested in all those things. You are responsible for your household.
Yeah.
The education of your kids, the provision of light, the provision of water, and the provision of shelter. Every Nigerian is like that. So I think that's one of the foundations that created Nigerians, that hungry character. I think it's from
self-governance.
Yeah. You know, self-governance.
I like the concept of self-governance, because you find we usually, most other cultures like to compare Zimbabweans and Nigerians because we have huge similarities.
Yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
also believe that we're own governments. The only difference that I've noticed with the Zimbabweans is that we can go a certain level, but we won't go the extra mile.
Yeah.
Like a Nigerian would. You see, there's that place where Zimbabweans stop and say, oh, we can't pass here. Nigerians say, well, I still good. That's the difference. You understand?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that needs to translate into our people. I mean, having been traveled and seen things in life, you start to understand the importance of certain cultures rubbing off on Absolutely. Yourself Absolutely. And your peers and whatever the case may be.
Absolutely.
Because it's important for us to create that sort of gel and that sort of blend for the future leaders of Africa.
Absolutely.
Because today you could be worth $63 million. Mm. Between me and him, next week we could be worth $100 million.
That's what's up.
But now what's going to happen is that now we've created three like mega millionaires in Africa.
Absolutely.
And I think the only way we can do that is by that trade and exchange of ideas and knowledge.
Absolutely, I agree with you.
And that's the basis of this show. We were saying what Africa does not speak to, Africans do not speak amongst each other. Like, we don't know about each other's countries and what's going on in the countries and in terms of exchange of business, you know, ideas. We're not there.
I strongly believe that, you know, the soft powers, the Western powers and everything, some part of them has given a wrong narrative of Africa.
Mm. Yeah.
And Zimbabwe, for example, I think Zimbabwe has a very, very unfair advantage over other people, because if you don't give people the capacity to be who they can be, if you don't give them the infrastructure or the leadership of who they can be, of their true potential, then their narrative will be different.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so the way we have to change it to have a competitive level ground where I'm giving the right education, you are giving the right education. Mm-hmm. See, if you fail, it's your business.
Yeah.
But when you give one person the best education and the other guy nothing, you don't expect him to grow.
Exactly.
100%. You know,
so I think that's the unfair advantage that's been happening to a lot of African and particularly in Zimbabwe. I'm a strong believer of Zimbabwe, no matter what it's going on right now in Zimbabwe. Mm. And I believe that Zimbabwe has not even touched 10% of its potential.
That's true. That is true.
So I want to wait.
Thank God it hasn't, because they would have looted it.
I want to wait to see the greatness of Zimbabwe as a flagger of Africa in the future.
I think our generation definitely carries the mantle that's going to be able to change Zimbabwe. I think our mindsets and our travels and the roads that we've walked are so varied and so different. Like, I'm not a normal Zimbabwean.
Hmm.
As you can say, a normal Zimbabwean, I'm not that. Yeah. He's not a normal Zimbabwean.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
I got it.
Yeah. You would not find us in a place where you find Zimbabweans.
Hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
I got it.
We do things that you'd not normally think Zimbabweans would do. And that's the type of people that you're looking for to take a country to the next level.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's unfortunate. I'm not going to say this derogatorily, but people have to die for us to get a chance. And that's just the honest truth.
Mm.
Because we're not going to take, like Nigerians, we're not trying to fight anyone.
Mm. Absolutely.
We want to make sure our corner is fine.
That's true. That's
if you come to our corner, we have a problem. But anything else along the road, hey, man. Because we've tried to talk to you.
Absolutely.
We've tried to ask you.
Absolutely.
We've begged you. You're not listening. So what is the point? Are we going to continue having this? It's like in your house. You have begged your wife to cook. She's not cooking.
Ah.
You have told her, go and buy the food. She's not buying. So must we argue about this thing every day? Do it yourself.
You know. Absolutely.
But, yeah, wait for your time. Wait for your chance. Yeah. And I think even in Nigeria, that's another discussion that needs to start happening.
Yeah.
What I was saying when I was speaking towards the fraud issue was that out of all those guys who are guaranteed fraudsters or whatever the case may be, I meet and I discuss with a lot of these guys, and these guys know what they're doing. If you give them a chance to do legitimate business, if you give them a chance to live legitimately,
absolutely,
they'll take it up in
they'll
a second.
Up and
the unfortunate part is that it's the powers that be. That's why in the beginning of the conversation I said, it's the leadership. That's where I agree with you. The leadership is a massive problem for Africa. Mm. If you come down here for the last month or so, people have been fighting about Zuma this, Zuma that, Zuma this, Zuma that, Zuma this. It can't be a situation whereby, as Africans now, we're still in conflict with the people that we put in power to lead us. People need to represent us the correct way so that we can give our children an opportunity. You know what I mean?
I want
my son to be worth at least $63 million too, you know? And then I'll be worth like $600, you know?
We got to wrap that one up. We've got other guests, but Suji, can you just tell us very briefly about the Sujimoto Group and how, you know, people can, you know, get in touch and, you know, social media, emails.
Okay. The thing there is, thank you very much. This is an amazing platform, and you know, I hope we've been able to touch some people today.
Mm-hmm.
The Sujimoto Group is a purely real estate and hospitality group. We are focused in changing the luxury experience of living.
Mm-hmm.
So we one of our mantra is to do things that's never been done before, and because we're so people focused, we it is not our intention to do things 10% better. Mm-hmm. It is our intention to do things 10 times better so that we can wow the experience of our clients. Mm. So, and I think if anybody uses this as a foundation of anything they want to do, it's very easy. This thing I'm doing, how can I do it 10 times better? Mm-hmm. And I think the sky is going to be a limit.
100%.
Wow. Thank you very much.
When I come into Nigeria, I'm staying in one of your real estate.
You're welcome, please. Man. You're welcome. I want you to
I need to come to Nigeria like this afternoon. I've got some problems.
And for Zimbabweans, we always have our passports in the pocket. You never know, man. You might just get on a jet for no reason.
So our website is www.sujimotonig.com. Yeah. You can see a couple of our projects. You can follow us also on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. If you just type, I think it's Sujimoto 81 and Sujimoto NG, or immediately type Sujimoto, something will come up.
I know the Sujimoto group on Twitter as well.
Yeah,
and I'd like to commend you, sorry, just before he goes, for obviously bringing Kabi under your wing. You know, absolutely. I've known her for a while. I think you see, this is part of what I was saying before, bringing Africa together.
Yeah.
And because what she's going to learn and the experiences that you're taking her through is going to make her massive. I swear
absolutely.
To God,
absolutely,
definitely.
We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sujimoto.
No
brother.
Borders.
Yeah. I
can't explain. This is CliffCentral.com.
No borders. I hope the whole of Nigeria was listening today.
Nigeria was well represented today. Thanks, Palace.
Why are you tripping? The eye you just gave a fair like.
Because I don't get it. I'm like, but really? Are we on? Like, what's up?
Wow, man.
I think it's been this 2 weeks. This 2 weeks that we're
away,
I can imagine the things you were
going
through.
It feels like it was like a year ago, man. It's been a minute since we've been online.
It's actually been a minute. But I'm very happy now we're in our biggest space and we've reclaimed our space.
Our heritage.
We failed to reclaim Zimbabwe, but we can reclaim this space. Yeah. Tibotach, you've been occupied, my friend.
CliffCentral.com. No borders. Every Friday, 1 p.m. So we had Suji in the building. We had Linda on Skype via Nigeria. Shout out to y'all. We hope you're still listening. We hope you start listening to No Borders and spread it across the rest of Africa.
Yes, sir.
We now have Jabu Mabobo, who is the CEO of the Zim SA Forum.
Nice.
And Anil Ndlovu, who is the president of the Zim SA Forum.
Nice.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I was talking to them outside, and I'm like, okay, what do you really want to talk about, right? And they're like, okay, we have a conference that's coming up, and it's called The Ease of Doing Business in Zimbabwe. I was baffled. I'm like, what? What do you mean, the ease of doing business?
First, you can't put those two words together in a sentence. Ease and Zimbabwe.
Okay, before we bash this whole concept,
I swear,
can we talk about, can you give us a brief background about what the Zim SA Forum is?
Exactly.
I think the president can go observe protocol.
It's political, isn't it?
No, not really.
It's Zimbabwe.
Thank you so much, guys, for this particular opportunity.
Yeah.
We really appreciate this, so we can have this discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that you guys are already tackling the topic to say, how do you mix ease?
Yes.
And Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And Zimbabwe. Yes. Mm-hmm. These two particular terms.
Yeah.
Probably you wouldn't have noticed over a certain period of time the changes that the government has been doing.
Yeah.
There is always a time to get a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. You know, the country has gone through so much, you know, over the years. You're talking about currency, you're talking about sanctions, you're talking about all those particular things. But in this particular moment in time, observing what the government is doing, it is becoming critical that we talk about what they are doing in terms of making it easy to do business in Zimbabwe, which is the essence of the topic today. You want to know about Zim SA Forum. It's basically technocrats and business people coming together and say, what can we do for our country? Mm-hmm. There's this attitude of there's this attitude of Africans. I mean we've just had a very profound discussion about business, and we always look somewhere for help. We're always hoping that something is going to fly down from somewhere to come and rescue us.
I swear.
It ain't going to happen.
Dependency.
Yes.
We love donors.
Very true.
Yeah, we love it. So nobody's going to come and change Zimbabwe for us. Mm-hmm. It is our responsibility to change the country.
Yeah.
Look, we can say all we want, but you had the gentleman previously speaking so highly about Zimbabwe that it's a land of opportunities. There's so much that we can extract and give to the world. We've got so much to offer. So at this particular moment, ZMSA Forum is there exactly for that.
Yeah.
To say, look, the country's open for business. And talking about the conference, we are bringing in the ministers to come and explain to the people that, no, it's not what you see, but come and visit us, see what we have to offer and see what we have done to change our ways in terms of allowing people, opening opportunities for business people. Yeah, you talk about venture capital, hedge fund managers, all the people who have got funding to come and invest in the country.
100%.
Ask the ZMSA Forum. Come on, we need to come up with something. Do you guys want to give us $1 million? We can start a radio station.
Well, yes. That particular question is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Hence, I would emphasize that come to the conference because a lot of investors are coming there. But again, one thing that I always say is that you can't talk bad about yourself.
No, you can't.
And if you can keep on talking bad about your country, what's going to happen?
But you can be honest.
You can be honest.
Yes.
You gotta be careful which direction you're taking your honesty to. You know, you also have to look at what's good and what's bad. But look for the good that you can get out of that.
I totally agree, because a lot of people have said this before. But okay, in my own understanding of it, you see, having experienced the brutality of this thing called Zimbabwe as a country, and I'm not talking about the populace, I'm not talking about the beauty and the good of the country, I'm talking about the bad and the rotten that is obviously clear. And I want people to understand that there's no way we can shy away from discussing what is rotten and what is bad about the country. So for instance, when I say, okay, Zimbabwe is a bad place to be, I'm not referring to the entire country, because I go there all the time. It's my home, you understand, and I love it. But I know exactly what I mean by that statement, because right now, currently, we're using bond notes. Right? We've got corruption is rife throughout government departments. Even there's no private sector anymore, because it doesn't help. Everybody's just as bad. You understand what I'm saying? So those are the things that we need to highlight in the sense of we want that sort of change. For us to be able to do what you're trying to encourage us to do without fear, without even thinking twice about attending, let's say, a conference of their nature, we would need to know that, okay, fine, Zimbabwe is a safe playing field to do business. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
But now I can't walk into my country and then one minute I'm doing business in US dollars, then the next minute I'm doing business in bond paper that has no value, but apparently has value at 1 to 1 of the dollar. These are the things that we have issues with. And unfortunately, if we are not the ones who speak about these things, then who will?
Yeah, I think... can I come in there?
Yeah, sure.
No, thanks. I think you have raised a very important question. That was the point of departure of ZMSA Forum.
Yes.
Say, let us not shy away from the realities that describe what Zimbabwe has been known for.
Yeah.
And without dwelling much into what Zimbabwe has been known for, what is it that we're supposed to do to turn around that situation?
100%.
Right. So we came in at ZMSA Forum to say, ladies and gentlemen, we cannot allow Zimbabwe to go down further like this.
Yes.
There is now one way out of this, and it's the upward trajectory. And for the upward trajectory to take place, we approached government to say, this is what we want to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And in offering it, this is the space that we want.
Mm-hmm.
We are business. We are apolitical. We want to bring everyone who has the love of Zimbabwe at heart.
Mm-hmm.
But what has been happening cannot be allowed to continue to happen.
100%.
And through those engagements that we have had with the government,
mm-hmm.
it coincided with government's willingness to change.
Yeah.
Because as we speak, there are about 17 policies that have been amended for the ease of doing business in Zimbabwe. Okay. And they have not been clearly communicated.
100%.
There is one that is supreme above them all. That's called the diaspora policy.
Yes.
Where diasporans are encouraged to come back and rebuild the country.
Yeah.
There are economical zones that have been clearly demarcated
for the
privileged diasporans to say, come and claim your state.
Mm-hmm.
But what has been happening through the media and everything is that the negative perception, I'm not saying it did not happen, but it continues to be that overshadows the good. We're saying now is time to change. Come listen, because government has acknowledged to say, come as diasporans like other countries are doing, rebuild. We'll give you the space.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a good point about non-existence of state-owned enterprises.
Yes.
in South Africa, for example, you have had good investment opportunities because they were driven by state-owned entities. And in Zimbabwe, it's not happening like that because, like you rightfully say, everything is politicized. Zim SA Forum is coming in to play in that space to say, give us the platform. As government, manage politics.
And we will
let Zim SA Forum drive the economic development because we understand the business language. Let us engage with other business people. Let us talk to Zimbabweans. If I have to be brutally honest, Zimbabwe has the highest rate of literacy in the whole of Africa. And as I'm sitting now, I'm being interviewed by two, in fact, I'm surrounded by three highly educated Zimbabweans as an old South African Indian. That's why I always say, you know, when I go into Zimbabwe, I'm not coming back South African. Because of the intellectual capital that is in that country. What is lacking in Zimbabwe? It's just the capital injection. South Africa has got access to the capital, but it does not have access to that human capital. South Africa's economy is growing, being managed by Zimbabweans.
That's brutally honest.
And if you give that Zimbabwean, for example, let me be brutally honest. Lon Min has gone through a lot. But it has turned around, and under the rightful management of a Zimbabwean, Ben Magara. What stops Ben Magara to be given one of the best minds in Zimbabwe and turn it to a Lon Min?
Cisco Steel.
You understand? This is what we are talking about as Zim SA Forum, to say you will continue to have Zimbabweans bashed, but let us look at what is the primary aim of making it like that, because it is in this chaos where someone is benefiting. Who is benefiting when Zimbabwe is in tatters? So if we don't answer that question and we're not honest about ourselves, we will continue to have someone who is continuing to benefit out of the intellect Zimbabweans have. Whether you like it or not, guys, you have been educated in Zimbabwe. And it is the investment that Zimbabwe has given you.
Like,
unfortunately,
back after that,
because because of the opportunities that were not given, out of the honesty that you have just said, you had to look for opportunities somewhere. You are a successful economic refugee. But your country is continuing to go down because you have found comfort in managing someone else's wealth.
That is true.
You have left your wealth at home untapped, and yet you have that skill. So the Zim SA Forum is saying, let's come together, let us build amongst ourselves as Africans and rebuild Zimbabwe, because it is your country whether you like it or not. Your roots are there whether you like it or not. Your stories are there whether you like it or not.
A lot of them.
So which story do you want to continue to tell if you're not part of Zim SA Forum? We are not here to say someone is good, someone is bad. We are saying let us start from here and move forward. Because we have managed, just to give you a little bit of tip, to sit with venture capital, to sit with fund managers, and say to them, raise enough money. And I can say that without any fear of contradiction, that they have. We are saying we are looking for Zimbabweans in the country and South Africans to partner for the opportunities that Zimbabwe has opened, which we'll talk about them honestly and openly at the conference. We are having ministers that are coming down, and hopefully, if the schedule permits, the vice president will be coming into the country. We have the support of the ambassador, who is saying...
Which one of the vice presidents?
Mnangagwa.
Mnangagwa, okay.
Yes.
Is he the rightful vice president?
He's the rightful vice president.
No, you must declare. Anything can happen.
Before I allow my president to come in, I think it's important to mention that, look, if we don't hold hands, we'll continue to bash each other and someone will continue to benefit.
100%.
If you look at it nicely now, there are 8 flights a day leaving South Africa into Zimbabwe. Are they carrying in? And what are they doing in Zimbabwe if it is not Zimbabweans that are relocating back?
You know, Jab, I'm sorry, we're going to have to wrap it up very soon. But Anele, can you just go into a bit of detail about the conference, where it's going to be held and how people register and able to attend?
Thanks so much. The conference is going to be taking place in the Radisson Hotel in Sandton.
Okay.
On the 11th and the 12th of May. 2017, starting at about 8:30 until about 3 o'clock in the morning. Sorry, three o'clock in the afternoon. Yes. So basically, what's going to be happening on the first day, they are doing the presentations of all the economic opportunities that are available in the country. On the second day is exactly what you want to ask. Mm-hmm. Come and ask those particular questions, because all these departments, the finance cluster, the different ministries will be sitting and waiting for you to come and ask those hard questions that I can see you gentlemen are quite eager to ask. Oh, yeah. And that will be a very good opportunity. And for investors to come in and also engage and look at the opportunities in the country. So that's what's going to be happening. And then in the evening on Friday, we've got a dinner where we are going to be engaging, hopefully, as I said, if the schedule allows for the vice president to be available, he's going to come and engage the investment community and the diasporans as well on the real issues. So bring those real issues as hot as they are. You can contact Chabo. He's going to give his details out. And you can go into our website and register. And please do come for this particular conference, because
we will definitely.
Yes, indeed.
Most definitely. Actually, for the right price, we can come and broadcast.
No, from exactly. Your, I think we should be able to get the opportunity to do that, to actually come and broadcast this show from there. Well, look.
Yes, actually, brilliant idea, because when they come in earlier, you can actually come in and do the interviews and everything else.
Yeah, well, let's definitely discuss that. And like I said, I always move around with an idea, man. I got that idea. It's just not on paper.
You see, I think we're going to be the most valuable members of the forum.
Yes, definitely. And before we wrap up, I think it's important to mention that there will also be an MOU signing between the forum and the government of Zimbabwe to show the seriousness of the commitment of the country to allow us the space in which to operate.
I like
my contact details is 084-682-7672.
Okay, once again,
084-682-7672.
And the website?
It's www.zimsaforum.org.
SimSAforum.org.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jabu and Anele, CliffCentral.com, No Borders.
And once again, it's web.
Kamupiu, KF Malindi Jr.
And we'll see you next week.
Palisa, bye.
Cheers.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we are coming to you live from a poster on the wall of Stephen's bedroom. This is a glorious day for a home game, arguably the under-13 first kiss event of the decade.
That's right. Underarm conditions, a touch humid.
I don't think there's a dry pit in the house, Ken.
No, it's understandable, Paul. I mean, a lot of bounce on that throat nubbin did give away for the old yawn into stretch and shoulder grab combo. That's a classic.
Classic. His form, not quite on point, but you can't argue with those results. He has the opposition right where he wants her, locked between pit and palm.
Exactly. I mean, look at that circular, caressing motion. Man, that is some sexy circling.
And yet he's unlikely to find boobage that far north.
That's right.
But he sure is showing this girl's shoulder a good time.
Oh, hold the phone. He's going in. Yes. Eyes closed, mouth open at full extension.
That is a generous use of tongue.
Nailing it with that full facial action.
Ah, the sweet sucking sound of success. Oh, this is just beautiful.
Flies see too much. Kill them with fast, deadly doom.
All right, Paul, it's day 539 of Becky's Not Over Brad marathon.
We're here live on a frankly delicious bolognese stain on the living room wall.
I love what she hasn't done with her hair.
Stunning.
You know?
Works so well with that dirty, oversized ex-boyfriend sweater.
And looks like we'll kick things off with a hit of the old cheese in a can.
Classic.
I mean, if that isn't perfectly timed, cheesy aerosol magnificence, I don't know what is.
Me neither, Ken. Now look at this focus.
Yeah.
This commitment to season 3 of Obese Brides.
That's fat. I mean, 6 hours and counting. Unwavering.
Stop that.
Oh, another hit of cheese. And looks like she'll break now for some social media stalking.
Swiping through the ex's photos like a wild cat in a litter box.
She's already zooming in on a pic of the ex snogging a random.
Observe the bottom lip quiver, the face crumple. Oh, yeah. Nice. There is a bubble in that left nostril. That is moist.
Oh, this is big. Whoa, hold it. Hold it, Paul. Oh, yes. This seems to be an 8.7 on the ugly cry scale, Paul.
Yes, what a moment. You know what? I think this calls for some annoying face buzzing, Ken.
Agreed. Right behind you, Paul. Right behind you.
Flies see too much. Kill them with fast, deadly doom. CliffCentral.com.